Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change here on Saturday. Well, for all of our high performers out there who aren't satisfied with 1-2% growth, even in this downtime, wake up. This is an important segment. We welcome Ross Schaefer to the show. How are you this morning, Ross?
Oh, great. Thank you.
Terrific.
Thanks for saying it.
Absolutely. Well, Ross is a 6-time Emmy Award-winning TV host, comedian, and television producer who, in 1994, started using his show business experiences to teach corporations how to understand their buying habits, changes in attention span, culture, and technological events and trends that cause some businesses to grow while others die. To that end, Ross has written 12 human resource training films on customer service, leadership, and motivation. He's also authored 4 books, and the one we'll be focusing on today is brand new to the market. It's called Grab More Market Share: How to Wrangle Business Away from Lazy Competitors. In 2007, Ross created the Customer Empathy Institute in conjunction with California State University at Monterey Bay, and its goal is to teach young leaders the critical difference between empathy and service. So I'd like to start just with this question. What dawned on you over 15 years ago to segue from those wonderful roots in television to launch into trying to straighten out corporate America?
Well, I heard Bill Gates speak.
There you go.
Bill Gates, he told a group of broadcasters at an NBA meeting that he said, you think you all have job security with cable television, mm-hmm. and everybody will have a show. It's not true. He says, in the future, there will be 100 million television stations, and we'll be watching those shows on our phones. And in 94, it was just an absurd idea. There was no user-generated content or YouTube or anything. But having lived in Seattle, I believed he knew things we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started preparing for my demise in broadcasting. Dick Clark once told me, hey, you know, television is terminal, so always be prepared for something else. And so that was the jumping off point for me to have a backup career. And it was perfect because it was something that I could do from broadcasting, mm-hmm. and parallel that with why people would stop buying. And as you know, sometimes we have very little to do with what becomes a hit radio show, a hit television show, a blockbuster movie. It's always the public and the public consciousness that buys in and makes it a hit. And that seemed to be a very interesting concept for corporate America, who had 5-year plans and 10-year plans and tried to jam their ideas down the public's throat, and then were always surprised when people didn't buy.
Or more importantly, they were surprised when other organizations came over and knocked their socks out of the market.
Oh, it happens every single day. I remember being at a Kodak meeting where these executives were saying, well, you know, digital photography is a fad. It's just for early adopters.
Right.
And now the Kodak is barely alive. They're struggling to sell their patents. They had 148,000 employees in 1988. Now they've got about 15,000. It happens in every industry.
It does. You know, my background's automotive. I remember sitting in Germany at the preeminent Frankfurt Auto Show, and there on the dais were the head of Daimler Benz, BMW, and Opel, and they were all poo-pooing the fact that Toyota and Nissan had just launched their high-end luxury Lexus and Infinities into Europe. They were laughing on stage. And I remember sitting there saying, oh my God, they have no idea what just happened. The periscope went up and you guys are toast. And you look at, indeed, those organizations went right to the belly, the epicenter of the luxury car market at that time, back in the 90s, to launch those cars and just absolutely clean their clocks. And, you know, we know where everything else has gone since then, and particularly that car segment.
There's really a tendency for people who have made a lot of money one way to be in denial about change, and not even paying attention to trends that hide in plain sight. What I based my whole career now is based around unearthing those trends and then teaching people how to spot trends before they destroy you.
Indeed,
it's always interesting to me how they will. Well, Sony Music is a good example. Napster was so gigantic. a couple of college kids were that changed the music industry. Sony ignored it, sued Napster so that they would stop doing what they do. But Apple, a computer company on the side, says, well, this MP3 looks important. It took them 2.5 years to introduce the first iPod. So it wasn't like Sony had to react overnight. They had a couple of years to figure this out and didn't do it.
You know, you mentioned here in your book, and I think this takes you back, of course, to your television roots and the people that mentored and coached you and role modeled for you over the years, the quote from Johnny Carson where he said, I guess I'm smart enough to be dumb.
Yeah, I thought that was so profound.
The idea of humility, the idea of, and then you twist it to say for you, it's that dumb is the new smart.
We sometimes, corporate America, overthinks things. They think it must have a complicated answer if it's a complicated problem. Mm-hmm. And it's quite the opposite. There's one example where this Larimar Apartment Homes, they lose $5 million in pet deposits. So at the big meeting, I'm there, and they say, does anybody know how we can get these pets? People lie. They don't tell us they have pets, but we're losing all this money and damage. And one man in the back who manages 55 units said, I have the solution. I bought a dog whistle. I walk up and down the hall blowing my whistle. I find the animals. It was a brilliant and simplistic solution where he was just dumb enough to go back to what would be the simple solution. Carson had that approach. He never tried to think that his audience was super smart, and he didn't want to pretend that he was super smart. He had another quote that I thought was absolutely pertinent to anybody in any profession. And I asked him, how is it that you stayed on the air 30 years?
That's right.
He said, there's one thing. He said, you can't always get the best guest. You can't always have the best monologue. The rule that I followed was I never tried to be the best guest on my own show.
You betcha.
Why do we do that over and over and over and not honor or show some humility towards the people who give us money? It's embarrassingly smart and dumb at the same time.
Well, you know, and your point then, of course, is this is about 100% being focused on the customer. And
yes,
even to the point of extremities, and, you know, to go from departments that used to be called customer satisfaction to customer care to customer, you know, knock their socks off, right?
Mm-hmm. There's still a problem with this. As everybody knows now, the service or being served is not what it should be.
Right.
And we identified that in a time-starved economy. Nobody has time now. The bowling alleys have died because they can't go to league bowling. People can't plan meals 2 hours before they're supposed to eat it. So the grocery business came up with a hot chicken and the salad bar, so you don't have to decide. Well, if that's the case, customers want more than service. They want empathy. They want you to understand that they have no time. And now the new thing, because of broadband, is they want customer urgency. They want everyone to respond at, quote-unquote, internet speed. Because they have no time. They're waiting until the last moment. And organizations who don't believe that or don't respond as quickly as they possibly can will lose business. Today's customer will give you one chance.
Well, I think there's another piece of that customer urgency, and they have no time. The other thing is their time, they want to cram so many things into it because we want to maximize our life. You know, and take advantage of so many different things and so many different options, particularly the younger generation coming up. This is not new for them. They were born this way.
That's right. They absolutely
because they were born from us parents who are working two jobs or both have careers or, oh, by the way, we're still saving for this. So why would we be surprised that our youth, you know, are not even using their cell phones to talk to people because that takes too much time. I mean, Mom, there's too many pregnant pauses when I call Nikki. I think I'll just text her. It's more efficient, Mom.
It is more efficient. And if I want to talk to my friends and tell them how I'm doing or what I'm up to today, I can tell all 1,000 of my Facebook friends at once, here's what I'm up to today. So that's a very efficient way to communicate statewide.
However, though, you would right away take that one on and say, but am I really communicating? And am I really then keeping feet on the street to understand the trends that could be affecting my life or my business?
You're right. That's my perception there. Mm-hmm. Is that this should not be a world all about you. when you say, when Facebook asks you what's on my mind, that it's assuming that you're so important that people care about
really
what's
care,
on
yeah.
your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't get clicked on a like, or if you don't get that a response, what's happening now with the youth is they take it so seriously, they feel invalidated as human beings that no one cares to respond. And so then they tweet people, I had some soup. How is that? It's really the wrong perspective for building a company or building relationships, because it isn't about youth.
Well, I think the other piece of
them.
You bet. And back to that idea then, the new world order for a lot of our leaders and organizations, whether it be for-profits or non-profits or our public servants, is you almost can't be fooled by your own press or your own Facebook twits back at you, but rather, you know, are you really out there getting beyond, as you wrote in your book, the dashboards, the metrics, because the trends are something totally outside of that, aren't they?
They are. There's a big mistake. For example, the people think that the stock market is the economy. It is not the economy. It's a game that people play, and stock prices go up and down. I believe it's always perfectly priced because you pay what you think it's worth at that particular time. But the economy is very different, because the economy is showing that there aren't enough people with jobs, or people don't have enough jobs. To your premise in the beginning, the reason that some organizations can explode and grow even in recessionary times is that they are willing to take market share away from competitors. Competitors who are scared, competitors who are lazy, competitors who are not paying attention to what the trends are now. They're not even paying attention to their competitors. I'm a big fan of spying on your competitors, which can be done now legally, because all of these conversations are public. And we can know exactly what's happening and what our competitors are doing at all times because they announce it.
Right. The egos are such that they want to tell the world. Unless you go to Asia, of course, and then the periscopes go up and they go down and then they land on your beach.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
One of your,
in Africa, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right, where we assume, well, those are just developing countries. Well, wait a minute. There's a reason they're called developing, not necessarily meaning they're too dumb to make great moves, right, in the right direction. Some of the new trends that you're wallowing around here now, Ross, again, I have this picture of you both from your television background just absorbing so much from so many different angles, and now with obviously the vantage point you have and keynoting to so many companies and promoting now four books. What are some of the things you're seeing coming up at us next?
Well, the biggest trend that I can see coming is that people will not want to work at an office somewhere. There is a movement called ROWE, R-O-W-E, Results Only Work Environment, which means that Gap is doing it, AT&T is doing it, a lot of IBM is doing this, where if you come to work for us, great. You don't have an office here. Don't worry about it. Go to Starbucks. Go to the beach. Wherever. This is what we want to have done. How you get it done is going to be up to you, and we'll measure your performance to see if you're getting the job done. Well, this trend is twofold. It improves productivity, and it also allows a company like IBM or Gap to not carry so much overhead in officing. And that's this whole lean and mean thing is going to a whole other level. The reason they're not hiring people, organizations, is they don't need to. They have enough people to do what they need, and they can make plenty of profits. There has to be some other reason to hire people.
Now, I can imagine that puts quite a stress, though, on the old leadership models of the past, whether and not necessarily the autocratic person that strolled the aisles, you know, watching how many things you ticked in that little ticker tape, but still the whole dynamic now of building organizations where there's trust, where there truly is an understanding of what results do I need as opposed to measure my activities.
Yeah.
So this is a wholesale shift, isn't it, Ross?
It is a completely wholesale shift where you've just nailed it. There has to be a new level of trust because I'm not working where you can see me. And it's good. Because when you in the old dynamic, now there's this implied distrust that you must watch me, you must pay attention to my productivity, and now I've got to walk around looking busy. There's none of that in this results only work environment model. It's great for morale, productivity is up. Best Buy, it was two women from Best Buy who came up with this originally, and now it's cascaded throughout North America and some parts of Europe. but it's a good thing, and it it makes good sense. We're able to these organizations are able to hire part-timers, and one of the great things that's happening is that they're hiring retirees to come back to work, and they can do it from home, and not just these are not simple jobs. Northrop Grumman has got some great people, 65 plus. Who are working on the best and highest technology in fighter aircraft.
Well, and quite frankly, for those of us that come from the tech space as I do, is you recognize with the demographic shifts what they are, having all the baby boomers, although not everyone is jumping out because of what happened to their 401ks, but it's a matter of 3 to 5 years where they're going to see it. And with out goes the door, the institutional wisdom, but also the mentors and the trainers for the next generation that we may not have paid enough attention to because we were too worried about, you know, blogging up the system for the promotions of others.
That's posturing. Posturing
yeah.
for an advancement rather than advancing from results.
So you're right. In fact, I think in your book, in fact, I loved how you call that hire back to the future. Well put.
Yeah,
hire back to the future, and as grab all of our you know intellectuals. I often come, and my father retired from corporate America at 53. He's still running his own business at 85, and that's why he's still 85 is because he's running his own business. But also, it puts that stake in the ground that I'm not retiring anytime soon.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't
Which
it?
Is good.
Isn't interesting. We see today, for example, that Andy Rooney passed away.
Yeah, bless his heart.
92 years old, and he quit working 1 month ago.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us would enjoy it so much that we'd want to work until our last day? I think you're right. I think that's what I was in the AARP meeting, and the biggest breakout session, 2,200 people in this room, and the topic was how to start a second 401k past 65.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a new vigor now and energy. That why do we have to retire at a certain age? I get it in the airline industry, but
right.
but for a lot of others, you get pretty creative after you've retired, or if you want to be.
That's exactly right. Well, tell us a bit, Ross, about the story behind the story. Your new book, of course, Grab More Market Share, How to Wrangle Business Away from the Lazy Competitors. Why now? Why now? Why does this book make sense for you to come out with it?
I think the timing for me, because I was perfect, and the reason I say that is that I see so many organizations who are frustrated by listening to the government and the economists say, "Well, we're in the recovery period now." Well, really, when did that start? When did that happen? And now, with the double dip recession coming, instead of hanging back, smart organizations are saying, "I'm not going to settle for the 1% you, Mr. Economist, tell me that I'm going to get. I have stockholders, I have stakeholders, I have to build this organization." And I would spot some companies, McDonald's is a good example, where they were leveraging a trend. They were playing into a trend that they saw and leveraging into weakness. For example, in mm-hmm. Starbucks, they opened McCafe. And they, in the second quarter of 2010, pull in $420 million. It's $1 billion to date.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of an example was inspiring to me. And so I would see some other companies, Subway, for example, or Apple Computer, or Zappos, .com, the shoe. They're choosing not to participate in the 1% growth.
Or the negative nanner that, oh, woe is us,
yes.
as well. It's a keeping your head
yes.
down, scanning the horizon, and just moving out.
But yes, and they're not taking their cue from the Timothy Geithners of the world. They're saying, well, we've got our own plan, and why can't we do this? And we'll be better at our service and our empathy. We'll treat people well. And the other thing that really was in my face was great brands that just fell apart and were in bankruptcy. Jim Collins wrote a great book called Good to Great, and 7 of his 11
right.
profile perfect companies
right,
are either gone or they're in serious financial peril. I asked him once, I said, well, you know, how did this happen that 7 of the 11 are now gone? He says, you know, we don't know at all, but it's giving us the opportunity to write great to good. So it was, even in his own sense of humor, he's saying, you've got to pay attention. You can't be arrogant enough to think you're going to make profits going forward like you did 2 years ago, 1 year ago.
Well, I think one of the other things you really poke at that's many people understand and appreciate, you don't necessarily know how to harness, and that is the wisdom of the crowds or the enabling your customers and even your competitors in turning them to competimates where you can partner in different ways. And these are whole new models that, you know, go way beyond the classic, let's do market research and get the voice of the customer and now interpret the comments. No, no, I even want my customers to maybe do the front end design of this item we'll now put in mass production.
Isn't that, doesn't that fly in the face? It's really contrarian thinking that, if you're an organization, you traditionally would think, well, we're the experts here. We'll tell you how it should go. Even companies like Boeing, for example, you need competitors, like you said, they hire 100 of their, what would typically be competitors, into a secret room and say, let's figure out how to build this, this new Dreamliner. And don't keep the good stuff for yourselves. If you do, we'll penalize you. If you, by using the crowd with the internet herd, so to speak, or those people who already like you to help design your new business model, to design your new departments, tell us what we should be doing, there will certainly be a lot of bad ideas, but there will be a lot more ideas, and we can now make some decisions that going forward that we hadn't even thought of. My gosh, Starbucks asked that on their mystarbucks.com, and somebody came up with the splash stick that we now see in every Starbucks.
Yeah, that's right.
It's simple in its elegance, that coffee spits out of that lip hole. Let's plug it up. Let's make it look like it's something that could work.
There's another nice tone that you've put in this book, Ross, though, is it's not only engaging your customers directly and your potential customers, but reflecting back and looking at the talent you have within your own organizations and how you're going to tap your employees, because they really as well. Many times. And again, isn't that an under-leveraged resources in so many firms?
Absolutely. There are a couple of organizations, Wegmans Markets in the East, who do a great job of this, have a publicly stated edict that the customer is number two. Mm-hmm. Our employees are number one. And if you attack it that way, it will absolutely cascade south into the customer community. Too many times I've heard managers say, well, we pay people just enough money so that they won't quit. And their employees will say, well, I'll only work as hard as I have to so that I don't get fired. That's not the organization of the future. The organization of the future has people participating in the decision-making. You know, I keep using Zappos as an example, but one of the reasons is it's a young company, 10 years old, and last year, they paid each employee 11% of their annual salary as their Christmas bonus. What employee would not like to work for an organization like that?
You betcha. Clear the way. Well, Ross Schaefer, thank you so much for joining us. Ross's new book is Grab More Market Share, How to Wrangle Business Away from Your Lazy Competitors. You can learn more about his work on his site at rossschaefer.com. Thanks so much, and we're going to keep watching those trends that you're talking about and probably creating in the mix, Ross. Thank you very much.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Likewise.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it. Going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.